Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone.
The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
I'm at a Wednesday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. The next 4 hours, we've got you. Number of things to get into today. We'll talk some Royals baseball. We will talk some Kansas City Chiefs. We will talk some NFL draft. We got Mick Schaefer later on in the 1 o'clock hour, but a wide open show today because it is draft eve. We will do a number of different things today. We'll talk some Royals, as I just said, but we'll also get into draft scenarios for the Chiefs coming up tomorrow night and possibilities of trading up, trading back, players that might be worth it. And then coming up at noon, we will do a mock draft live, mock draft simulator, where we'll pause it at different points and see what it would be worth to get up there if a player is available and make a decision if we want to actually pull the trigger, if we want to make that trade. Is it of value to get this specific player? Do you hold your water? Do we trade back, etc.? We'll do that coming up at noon just to see the different things that might be on the docket tomorrow night. We may do it again tomorrow because it's a completely different draft every time you hit the simulator. So we'll see what happens there in the noon hour, and we will talk about that. 913-912-4810 is the text line. 913-912-4810, text line to join us to be a part of the show, part of the conversation. Let's get into the show. Let's get into the Royals. We start with the Royals finding a way to win last night. The big error opens up the door for the Royals in what was just going to be your typical Royals have a leadoff double that they end up stranding. Contact play, non-contact play, that can be talked about, discussed, debated, whatever. There was one out in the inning, and quite frankly, anywhere but the pitcher, contact play works. But that's a conversation for a different time. I want to talk about the fact that Isbell, one, puts it in play. That's of importance because we talk about the strikeout. We talk about, well, the strikeout, or what's the difference between a strikeout or just putting it in play? It's still an out. Well, that's the difference, is what we saw with Vlad Guerrero apparently reverting to his 8U days. and just the first baseman, clean play at short, easy throw, and the first baseman just simply drops it. We see that out at 3-2, or you know, wherever you're playing.
Maybe.
Maybe, that's right. You really don't. 6U, probably, you know, so, probably not 8U, probably not 9U. Especially once you get older, you're not doing that. So Vlad Guerrero just simply drops the ball. They get a run. It's 2-1. But they still had to capitalize after that. And Garcia, who hit the home run on Monday night, comes through with the single that Isbell heads to third. So you get first and third with then Bobby and Vinny. And Bobby just gets so pissed at that baseball. Like, that baseball said something about his mom. I'm thinking that, or a family member or a friend, because that baseball was destroyed. And Bobby rips it down the left field line and scores a couple. And Garcia, luckily Garcia being the man at first and not somebody that was slower, but Garcia scores as well. We know Vinny ends up grounding out, but the Royals take the 3-2 lead. And then at that point, all they have to do is hold on. All they got to do is hold on to a 3-2 lead with the bullpen coming in. And they did. So my question, as you know, I tweeted last night, man, that's just a professional win. You got an error, the door was open, but you took advantage. That is so 2023, 2022, 2018, 2019 Royals, the flip side, where you go, man, you did so many things right, but the dude just dropped the ball. And of course, you can't get out of the inning. You get a base hit, you get a double after it, which should have been the third out. You end up recording four outs in the inning, and you lose the game. And then you can't muster anything else after that. And then they bring on their closer for a two-out save, which I want to get into and talk about as well. But just in general, what's the takeaway from last night and the Royals finding a way to break the three-game losing streak in a night where their starter didn't necessarily have it, but a night where he did enough to keep them in the game, not necessarily, because we've seen Royals starting pitchers that didn't have it to give up 18. Maybe not 18, but you get the point. You give up enough runs early on. It looks more like Cole Reagan's on Saturday, unfortunately, than it does with Waka not being all that good, laboring through, and still limiting any damage to where that opening in the fifth inning resulted in the Royals getting the lead. So what's the takeaway from last night? Is it, you know, one game these things happen, or is there something bigger to glean from last night's victory?
This is what solid teams do. This is what 500 ball clubs do. This is exactly what the Royals didn't do. As you mentioned, the past 6 years, right? You win these games. When a gold glove, by the way, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. won a gold glove. Well,
the problem
at
is
first
he was
base.
Actually wearing his gold trophy glove, gold yeah. glove at first. That wasn't smart, but he was being kind of cocky. I get it.
If you watch early in the game, too, he had a scoop that he could have made. It wouldn't have mattered, right. And he looked so lost out there. So I don't know if he's got a little fielding yips or what, because that was there was two plays he could have made in this game that he, quite frankly, did not. But we talked about it as well just in general with Les Norman the other day. Did the home run that didn't mean a lot in that previous game of Michael Garcia. Did that unlock something? He goes, a home run doesn't always necessarily mean a guy's back. Well, he goes 2-for-3 tonight, or last night. He also drew a walk. That's a good sign. When the top of your lineup is finally starting to produce, I mean, the bottom half was still not ideal, but they scratched it across, and the bullpen closed the door. We'll get into James McCarthy and what it means and all that stuff.
Right.
But you could tell Q wanted to use his best guys. Q was going, I'm going with my circle of trust guys. We need to stop the losing streak. We need John Schreiber out there who's got a .82. We need Chris Stratton, who apparently is earning his way into the circle of trust, who got out of Waka's debacle with only one run given up. It was unearned for Stratton, went earned for Waka, of course. But he got out of that. And then, of course, James McCarthy going two innings and unconventional from a closer. No strikeouts.
Yeah, it's. I think they should probably cut him if you're not going to strike anybody out. Jack, what do you take away from last night?
Yeah, I hate the term must win, especially in baseball. It's too
especially
long of
game
a season.
24 in the
especially game 24. I really do think that it's such a useless saying in general. But I will say this. The one knock we could have had on the Royals through these first 23 games is that you could go back to the White Sox series and say, well, are they really good or are they just beating up on a maybe the worst baseball team we've ever seen assembled. And during this three-game losing streak, you saw a lot of people start going, this is who they really are. They can't beat any good teams. And we forget about Friday night. They beat the Orioles 9-4, and then you give up 7 in the second inning against Baltimore. You can't make that comeback. Then you're shut out. Then the offense still can't produce against Yusei Kikuchi in Toronto in Game 1.
You said that.
But, at least the Twitter folk said that. Let's go with that.
You say it.
Yeah, and with with this game, if that play is made at third base when they threw it over to Vladdy Jr., the Royals lose this game. Just because it was another situation, the contact play was on, which you're supposed to, I mean, not to be a coach here, you don't gun it home if it's back to the pitcher, and that wasn't like a hot comeback where you don't have time to react.
That was pretty easy to read.
Frazier and also on Massey for not just getting one in the air a little bit, just more situational hitting. But you could tell after that play, after the drop, everybody's at-bats seemed like they had their shoulders a little bit more laxed. Like you saw with Bobby Witt Jr. coming up. He's able to rope one down the line. No, it's a generational hitter we're talking about, but it's more so the guys after him. We saw with Mikel and his 8-9 pitch walk that he had. We weren't seeing those in his 0-for-25 stretch. He was seeing it a little bit better. He's got the confidence back. You had a couple other guys that were seeing the ball really well. Salvador Perez, who's been damn hot of late, he had a double later on in that game. And the bullpen, of course, carries them the rest of the way. But I would say that for a team like this, last night was important to win a game like that, because also in their three-game losing streak, there were a lot of unlucky things that happened. Baltimore had a lot of those squibbers that just went right past the glove, right? Toronto in game one had a couple of soft contact hits that resulted in runs. And even early on in this game, there was a couple of soft contact hits. There was an infield single that drove in the first run of the game. There was a couple of walks. There was a hit batter. And so for the Royals to get a break like that, one that probably happens one out of every 200 chances, if that, yeah. Where a guy just, it wasn't like he was lunging. It wasn't in the dirt. It wasn't high. It was right there, and he dropped it. You saw just this pressure leave them almost. And the fact they were able to hang on in that game, it is important. Because now you look at the rest of the series. You have Marsh tonight, Reagan's on Thursday. You split this series, you feel pretty good about a 3-4 homestand, considering what maybe some people out there were thinking of. They just can't beat anybody else with the exception of the Chicago White Sox. And that's why last night, I think, could maybe be the start of something where, hey, we know that we can compete with these teams, and we just needed something to break our way. And last night, it certainly did break their way.
Well, and it's not only, you know, you talk about the White Sox, and is this just a team that beats up on bad teams? I know the Blue Jays are not the Orioles, not the same team. The Orioles are so freaking talented. We've talked about that. When they were playing the Orioles, we discussed that, went up and down the lineup, looked at all the younger players and some jealousy that comes in. That's fine. We deal with that. I'll lay on a couch later on with a therapist and discuss the fact that the Royals missed on some first-rounders and the Baltimore Orioles didn't. It's odd. She's learned a lot about the Royals. It's weird over the years. Kidding. But the difference between the Orioles and the Blue Jays, it's there. But didn't we talk about with the Orioles the first two series of, man, they just couldn't find a way to win a game? They gave a game away. They should have won this game. They could have they could have taken both series, but they just didn't win them. They had a bullpen do this. They had a mistake there. They had situational hitting that was lacking in this game. It's just a little bit here and there that they weren't able to get over the hump. And then you come out of that series and Vinny Pasquantino going, you know, we feel like we could have taken both of these series. We feel like we're better than what we did, which is a confidence boost, I guess, from the outside looking in, that they at least believe that they are as good as one of the best teams in baseball. But they didn't do it. And this was a game where they did take advantage. Just because the error happened doesn't mean they were going to score any more runs. They still had to come up with two more hits, back-to-back hits with two outs, to score any runs. You still had to get the single, get the double to score the next two runs. So they could have been down 2-1. It could have been, you know what, great job. You got a run. Now find a way to get a run after that. Well, they didn't. They didn't find a way to get a run because it wasn't like they were up 10-4 and then it didn't matter after that. No, you could have added some insurance runs along the way. They just did not do that. So I don't know if the whole butterfly effect of like, well, if they only get one run, do things change? Maybe. But again, you could always use that insurance run along the way. So it wasn't just a matter of that the door was open. It was that they then took advantage of it. Maybe some of it is there's some luck, there's some fortune because it happened to be Garcia and Bobby Witt coming up. It wasn't, okay, the door's open, Renfro and Isbell are now up. And I know Isbell was the one that got the hit there, or at least put the ball in play on the air. But it could have been, oh my God, they left the door open. You got two outs. Who's up next? Renfro. Oh, okay. All right, let's see if he can run into one. Maybe that'll happen. No, you got Garcia, who maybe his shoulders are getting a little more relaxed the way that he had the previous at-bat, the home run on Monday night. And then that one just falling in. It wasn't 105 off the bat. He didn't rope it into left center. He got the ball. He got the bat on the ball, and it fell in play. All right, and it was a single, and he passed the baton over to Bobby Witt. That then helped him, Michael Garcia, also probably feel pretty good about his at-bat and the fact that I passed the baton and now it's a double. Now I get to score. So I came through with a hit and I scored. Now we got the lead. Let's go have some fun.
Are you saying they kept the line moving, Jason?
I'm not saying that. He did at least. But, I mean, there's some fortune that goes along with it. One, the clear fortune of the error happening.
Or create your own fortune, too, to an extent. Well, like, and that's what we're talking about with the strikeout. Yes, it was just some stupid stuff. If you strike out, though, you have zero chance. Mm-hmm. If you at least put the ball in play, you have a chance. Mm-hmm. If you hit it where they ain't, a little booty knock for Michael Garcia, right, you're creating your own luck to an extent right there. You'll get no luck when you're striking out, and that's what bad teams do. When Garcia was just so lost, and he's taking 94 down the middle because he was a 3-2 count. He's like, you know what? I just don't want to swing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll walk me. you're not creating your own luck. That's a player who's scared. You're at least trying to put the ball in play and do something there, right? I think you can make the case that Garcia, Isbell created their own luck.
I thought it was, I thought it was interesting on Monday night, too. I was out there in the locker room, and we talked to Mikel Garcia after the game, and Andy Rogers asked about the home run that he had, and right after he'd hit it, I mean, he crushed it, right? It was a no-doubter, but he slammed the bat down, and Andy Rogers asked him, was that frustration? Was that, you know, you are happy for your team? Like, this is a, hey, let's get someone going. He said, oh, it was purely frustration. You know, I was mad about the way things had gone. I think that's a little bit of a difference that we've seen with this team is that, you know, we think in the past, oh, if I'm struggling, well, I hope that we win. You know, I'll struggle, but I hope we win. And I don't think it's a selfish thing at all. But you can tell that when some of these guys are starting to get going, there is this relief that, you know, lifts off them a little bit, if you will. And I do believe that when one of these guys has the pressure lift off them, it almost passes on to the next guy, right? We saw with Salvador Perez when he was struggling through two games, really. It was the first two games of the year. It kind of passed on some of these other guys, like MJ Melendez, who had struggled through the first two games, to kind of take that and go with it. So you wonder now where, as everybody got contagious with the slump, can it be contagious for now? Let's break a couple of these other guys out of the slumps. And that's when this offense goes from, what was it, you know, one run a night, two run a night, to maybe putting together consistency where it's not boom or bust. It's not nine runs one game, no runs the next game. And I think that element of hearing the frustration, Kyle Isbell, the same thing. He homered in Monday night and kind of slammed the bat down. That wasn't a, I finally got into one, let's get going now. It was, no, I've been struggling, and that felt good. I feel a lot better about my swing. Now, Isbell didn't have the same game as Mikel did last night, but you do feel like that can be something, as much as it's a cliche in baseball, that can be the thing that gets you going because you finally see one that leaves the yard, that finally finds a gap, that finds the outfield grass. And with Mikel, maybe it is only two games here, but it's a hell of a lot better than what we saw over that six-game road trip where he was 0-for the entire time.
It's a team, too, that, you know, we talked with Les Norman yesterday that with Michael Wach on the mound, there's a reason why we were excited about this season, about what it could be because of the starting staff, because you bring in some professional pitchers. Obviously, the trade for Cole Reagans was awesome, but you bring in a Walker, you bring in Seth Lugo, so you feel good about three guys. Brady Singer, you know, what he has done in the past. So you feel good about four times, you know, four nights that those guys are going to the mound to get a chance to win. We didn't know about Alec Marsh. I mean, he was named the starter, but at the time when the season was starting, we didn't know what Alec Marsh was going to be. We didn't know he was going to be a, you know, 3-2 ERA guy through the first, you know, four starts of the season and be 3-0 on the year. We didn't know that was going to be the case. I certainly didn't. I would have lost some money if you would have said who's got the best record in terms of decisions through the first 24 games of the season. Who is it? Alec Marsh. Take all of my money. I'm putting it down on Alec Marsh. No, it's not the case. But the at least four times through the rotation where you feel like you've got a chance to win, that's how you limit losing streaks. That's how you keep it from losing seven in a row or eight in a row. And that to me is the importance of even Michael Wacha's outing last night, where he gets to the fifth inning and there are 11 base runners through five innings. But that's a professional out there that's finding a way to get through a game where he just simply didn't have it. He didn't have his stuff last night. And they still win the game, even though he wasn't out there looking like he did in the first couple starts of the year. And now it is four games in a row. It's this when we talk about every night of those four, at least. And Alec Marsh, I feel that way, too, with him going to the mound tonight. So I'm going to throw him in there. But going back to the beginning of the season, you had four guys that were going to the mound and you felt good about winning. This trip through was Reagans, you lost. Lugo, you lost. Singer, you lost. And Michael Wacha, you lost. That would have been tough, you know, this early in the season to go, well, that kind of throws a little water on that fire of what it meant for this early in the season. But they found a way to win that game, and they found a way to have a pitcher at least get to the fifth inning when he didn't necessarily have his good stuff. Because Lugo didn't look great, and his line got beat up. Brady Singer's line was not as good as maybe he pitched in the game. But still, you're talking about seven runs for Reagans, four runs for Lugo, five runs for Singer, but only two for Wacha, even though Singer may have pitched better than Michael Wacha, just depending on that. And I think that's the importance of last night, too, is because it sort of adds credence to, hey, every night, these four guys, it's how you limit a losing streak. They lost three in a row. Somebody else on the mound of the past that didn't have it, The Royals don't win that game last night because they scored three, and they got a break with an error, but they only scored three. And how many other pitchers that didn't have it would give up more than three through five innings?
I think it also shows a ability to trust your bullpen, that the bullpen's finally starting to pitch better.
That's a big part of it,
in the fifth, you go four and a third, bases loaded. At that point, he'd only given up one run, right? And he still turned to Chris Stratton because he goes, you know what, we trust our bullpen. We have multiple guys now that we think can get out of this jam. Stratton, again, gives up one with the bases loaded, which is not end of the world. That was a huge stopper moment for Stratton. Comes out the next inning, throws that. He's really turned into a solid pitcher. Getting the walks have been, whether it's the umpires or not, he's still walking too many dudes. But really, overall, you're seeing Angel Zerpa look pretty good out of the bullpen. James MacArthur, again, he's been an absolute stud. But Schreiber's been an absolute stud, 2.82 ERA this season. There really is, from the first, week of the season when the bullpen was just absolutely atrocious. And, again, a lot of that was Will Smith, but the entire bullpen was not getting it done.
McCarthy, too.
Yeah.
MacArthur.
James
McCarthy. MacArthur. MacArthur.
J.J. McCarthy.
J.J. Yeah. McCarthy, that's exactly
right. That's probably why he probably shouldn't have been out there.
I may have some NFL draft stuff going on in my mind. There's a lot of things bouncing around right now in the mind with watching the Royals and being invested in the Royals this year, unlike years of the past, while the draft is, you know, a little more than 24 hours away, which is great. It's an awesome spot to say MacArthur, but then say McCarthy when I meant MacArthur, because we're draft and we're talking Royals. I want to talk a little bit more about the bullpen. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More than half the game. I mean, it was only one out more, but more than half the game, the bullpen was out there and gave up only two base runners for 4 2/3. I mean, Waka goes out there, gives up 11, and then the faucet was just turned off when the bullpen came in. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Also, there's been this talk about Salvi in the Hall of Fame and what he's doing and how hot he's hitting right now. What more does he have to do? How close is he? Looking at other catchers that have been in the Hall of Fame and what Salvi has accomplished in his career so far, because he's been pretty awesome watching him play this year. A rejuvenated, a younger, the fountain of youth, Salvi. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We had up until 2 o'clock. We've got you. We'll talk some NFL football coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, the noon hour. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer coming up at 1 o'clock, 913-912-4810. I do want to talk about the bullpen because early on in the season, there's so much made of the first week, the first couple of games, that it sort of dictates the storylines and the feel for the rest of the year. And the fact that the Royals went out and rebuilt the entire bullpen, and then they came out and peed down their leg, mainly because of the biggest addition being this World Series closer for the last few years that comes in, and he's, you know, recruiting other players, and he's got this group of guys that he's friends with, and that helps, you know, build this Royals roster in the offseason. And then he comes out and doesn't look good. And, you know, the other guys in the bullpen are walking guys and not looking good. And then it's okay, same old bullpen. Here we go, same old bullpen. And I understand that when I say if you haven't been watching, because, you know, Major League Baseball doesn't make it easy for you to watch, but the bullpen is just completely different now. I do wonder how much the general opinion of the bullpen has changed along with the performance, as opposed to why we put so much of an emphasis early on in the year, because somehow storylines and opinions are shaped for 162 based off of five. And if those five games happen in July, it's they went through a rough patch. Five games happen late March, early April. This bullpen sucks. And that's how it is the rest of the year. And anytime you get out of a game without the bullpen giving up runs, it's an exhale. Oh, thank God they didn't suck like they did 19 games ago. I mean, it's like, you know,
earlier
this month, way back when it was, I hope they don't, thank God they didn't suck like they did when UConn was dominating teams. thank God they finally got away with one. But when we look at, like, early on, it was about the starters, the bullpen. You get to the bullpen, you're giving up runs. This stretch through these four games where, you know, the three-game losing streak and then last night finding a way to win, you had Reagans, Lugo, Singer, and Waka. And those guys combined for for 18 earned runs. 18 earned runs. Reagan gave up 7. Okay, Reagan 7, Lugo 4, there's 11. Singer gave up 5, there's 16. And last night, Walker gave up 2. So you got 18 earned runs. In that same time frame, over 18 and two-thirds innings pitched, the bullpen's given up 2 earned runs. If you flip that, it'd be like, yeah, of course, that's what the season was going to be. There's the same old bullpen. But early on in the season, the starting staff was so much the story and the bullpen was the issue that this trip, it's only one trip through the rotation, and they've had many other trips through this rotation where that were awesome. This trip wasn't great. This trip happened to be one to where these four guys didn't go out and throw up the zeros and the, you know, non-crooked numbers, you know, throughout the game. But the bullpen has shown that it is not the first 5 games of the season. It's not the first 6 games of the season. And now that roles have changed, Q is not throwing at the end of the game in high leverage situations Will Smith anymore, which is a good thing. But it took some time. But I'll also credit him with not trying to continue to shove a square peg in a round hole. This is going to work. I'm telling you, this is going to work. He recognized it pretty early and was like, okay, we're pulling him out of the game in the ninth, putting somebody else in, and that was it. It's the last time we saw Will Smith in the closer's role for this team, and unless there's injuries or him just turning things around, we're not going to see that, and he's turned into a little bit of mop-up duty now until he figures it out. That's a quick change with a veteran guy. How many managers with a veteran? Mike Matheny with a veteran guy and Will Smith, he would still be running out there. I am convinced he would still be running out there as the closer right now. Will Smith would be if Mike Matheny was the manager right now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what helped that situation too is I believe Will Smith, after he had blown the game in Baltimore, came to Matt Quatrero and said, listen, I'll pitch in whatever role you want me to. And you know, we are so easy to bag on Will Smith because of the numbers, and that's a part of the game. If you struggle, nobody's going to make excuses for you. But I do think Will Smith, being a professional that he is, didn't say, no, I was signed here to be the closer. I'm not going to pitch and mop up.
You're not taking me out of the closer's role that early. Yeah, I had a couple of bad games. That's not how this works. This is the big leagues, okay? This is the show.
It's April, right? Oh, I've been pitching well. I'm just missing spots here and there. No,
you saw me close in October last year, right? I mean, so...
It was one of those spots where, you know, Will Smith had every right to say, I've been on 3 straight World Series teams. I've pitched in high leverage. I've done more than James MacArthur has at this level.
Yes.
But the fact that he said, throw me in whatever role you want. I want to pitch where you want to put me in. You know, I will try to do my best. If it's mop up, if it's close games, if it's setup role, 6th inning, 5th inning, whatever the case may be. And Matt Quatrero still gave him one more chance, right? It was that White Sox game. Will Smith came in. But I was at that game. James MacArthur was warming up at the beginning of that outing, and Will Smith didn't get out of it. And that was when James MacArthur took that closer's role and ran with it. And to me, that's good managing on that part, right? It was, hey, I'm going to give you one more chance. If you can't cut it, we're going to the younger guy because the younger guy has better stuff than you. And we have seen the bullpen kind of take off from that point. That, to me, was the turning point because guys had started to settle into their roles, and we are – you know, going to overreact 5 games in because nobody had roles. Who was pitching in what inning? Who was the 6th inning guy? Who was the 7th inning guy? And as Sterling pointed out a little bit earlier, now guys have defined roles. Chris Stratton kind of in that circle of trust now. John Schreiber is the quote-unquote fireman. He's the setup guy. A little bit of both when you're facing the best part of the lineup like last night and it's not the 8th or 9th inning. It's going to be John Schreiber. And then James MacArthur, if he hasn't pitched in a while, can get a 6-out save. And when you see those guys get penciled in there, your bullpen's naturally going to get better because guys know when to prepare, when they're going in, and it's not just throwing a dart up there and saying, well, we need Serpa to go into the 8th inning. And Serpa's been good, but he's not a setup guy. So that's why I think we've seen such a tremendous jump, not just that Will Smith is bumped from the closer's role, it's that these other guys have identified where they're throwing, and that, to me, began back on that first White Sox series.
And you actually look at a lot of the ERAs. Now, there are some reasons for trepidation, I think. Again, we've talked about the strikeout numbers in general. You know, I went through Nick Anderson's. We were laughing about it, how he was a 1 year, he had a 17 strikeout per 9. 17. Then 14. Last year was down to 9. He's not trending the right way. This year it's actually 3. 3 strikeouts in 9 innings. Again, he's actually pitched fairly well, but is there some concern there? Will Smith's fastball. First time he's thrown it well more than his slider in previous seasons. Just looked it up. Normally he was a slider first guy. This year he's been fastball first. And by the way, his fastball's down 2 miles per hour. Not ideal, but again, as we mentioned, he's somewhat out of the rotation. But in general, you look at MacArthur. He's got a 3.09. You look at Schreiber, 0.82, Stratton, 3.27, Zerpa, a 1, 1 run in 9 innings. I actually was laughing because you said, you know, he's not a setup guy. I don't know if he gets there, but if you're telling me if it's the 8th inning and 2 out of 3 are lefties, is he going up there? He might. Like, this bullpen is starting to get deeper, and you're right with the roles, but now they found a lefty, at least in my opinion, you can trust later in games. And no, it's not Will Smith. But that's what you do early on. That's why everyone who might not be, have watched since UConn was rolling teams might still think this bullpen is atrocious. They were feeling out. And Will Smith, you're right. That's why he's been on 3 straight World Series teams. Because he's a guy who is putting the team first. He's not a guy who says, it's me. Because even those years, it's not like he was the best pitcher on those teams. He got hot for the playoffs last year in October, but he wasn't the guy all year long. Jose Leclerc, I believe, was a closer for the majority of the season, right?
Yeah, and he took over for good in that Texas run.
So, again, this is what this team is building. It's a lot of young guys. There's a veteran who's a leader. And not it's not Jose Guillen out there. No, no one remembers Jose Guillen in the...
Oh, I'm...
Yeah, no, I just... he was...
Getting an argument with fans.
Bleep the fans, I think, is one of the things
for
he said.
For dogging it down the first baseline.
They boot him, and he's bleep the fans. Like, I don't know that that's the right strategy to take. I also don't really... I didn't really agree with the boos with dogging it, since he did have a quad injury that he was also... Mm-hmm. Playing through, he gets a ground ball right to second baseman, and he's dealing with a quad.
There's 162 of these. You don't need to bust down the line to second base.
Salvi ain't busting it down the line every time, and he ain't getting booed, nor should he. So you know, that's a conversation for a different time. But it is an oldie but a goodie. it is a throwback.
It's a good pull.
It is a throwback to when the crowd booed him. But it's like, come on, man, he's battling a quad injury. Anyway, as we look at this bullpen as well. Last night, let's talk about specifically last night and the strategy that went along with it, because bringing in MacArthur for 2 innings to get the save, if you bring him in for 2 innings for the save, that can't be, I wouldn't guess it would be gut feel of, you know what, let's just do this now, as opposed to before the game, the strategy with the pitching coaches, everybody else that's around and saying, what do we do here late in the game? Because we've lost 3 in a row. And if we've got a lead, who do we throw out there? And if we've got to go early, if Waka doesn't have it, where are we going? How are we going? What's the setup? Because I don't think you go into a game last night and go, okay, well, Waka doesn't have it. Now, hey, guys, let's huddle together. What are we going to do? What do you want to do? Is Stratton, maybe? Schreiber? You want to throw Nick Anderson? Zerpa? Niziana? Do we go down? Do we call somebody up from the minor leagues right now, you know, and see if they can get here in time? What do we do? Let's figure this thing out. And the fact that they went Stratton, Schreiber, and then MacArthur to bring him in for a 2-inning save says a couple of things. One, there's a plan and a strategy that goes along with that, and a plan of attack beforehand. And maybe even more important, that there was a recognition, I think, from Matt Quatrero of how important last night's game was, just to get that win. And not, we may need MacArthur tomorrow. I don't want to use him 2 innings if we need to use him tomorrow. I mean, what if he pitches like 30 pitches in these 2 innings? We can't have him for tomorrow's game to close. Well, tomorrow's not here. And right now, you got a chance to win this game, to break the losing streak, get a good feeling going. And I liked what I saw last night from Quatrero in using the bullpen there and saying, game 24 matters. Yes, 162 matters, but game 24 matters as well. And if we're serious about trying to compete and wanting to win a division, and Cleveland keeps freaking winning, okay, so we got to try to keep pace at some point with them. They keep winning. This game matters, and we got a chance to go and win it. So we're going to put the guy that I trust the most out there for 2 innings.
I think Matt Quatrero might be the most tactical manager the Royals have ever had, and that was kind of the hope coming over from Tampa Bay, that the way they had assembled their team, that they could win games like this where your starter only goes four and a third there. You got to go to it early. But we've seen this change where I think in the past, even under Ned Yost, there were guys that they just didn't use until the seventh, eighth, and ninth. And it was easy when you have HDH, right? It was just give me Franklin Morales or Ryan Madsen for the sixth. Then we've got it locked down the final three. When you don't have that, you have to use guys maybe earlier than you want to. James MacArthur, I think, was actually warming up Saturday when the Royals were coming up, like to come in the seventh or eighth inning. And it wasn't that Matt Quatrero was going, well, you know, it's close. You know, we feel like, you know, he's the best matchup guy. It's that here comes the best part of the lineup. It's close. We need our best pitcher in that spot. And last night, that's why they went with Schreiber in the sixth instead of saving him for the eighth to bridge the gap to MacArthur, because they had to use Schreiber there. They didn't try to sneak one in there with putting somebody out there like a Nick Anderson again, where it's, well, it's only the sixth inning. We don't want to burn our guys. No, if you're facing the meat of the order and you have a one-run lead, you just took that lead. Yeah, they went with Stratton. He got the shutdown inning, but then it's still a one-run game. You want to go to your best guy in that spot. And if it's a little bit earlier, that's all right. And in that eighth inning, I love that Matt Quatrero said, MacArthur hasn't pitched since last week. It was game one of the doubleheader against Chicago.
6 days since he's been out there.
He's fresh, right? So he could go two innings there. But it wasn't this, well, do we want to burn him? There's two more games in this series. We don't have an off day on Thursday. We got to play in Detroit Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then we're back playing Toronto. It's going to be a tough spot to manage that. But he also, as you said, knew how important this game was. They had to kind of end this streak at this point. And if it meant going to your best arms a little bit earlier, that's still the best way to go about it. If it failed last night, it still was the right move.
Because, you know, Sterling talks about this, and I've talked about it as well. Like when, you know, we're dealing with like little league kids, I talk to my son all the time, process over results. Like, okay, yeah, I hit the ball hard, right, but, you know, the swing was pretty ugly there, or you did this, or you stepped in the bucket and you hit it, so that worked that time, you know, but it's not going to work when that pitch is on the outside part of the plate and you're not protecting there. Process over results. Well, great swing, yeah, but I fouled it off. Right, but just stick with what you're supposed to do, and you talk about it as well, because, you know, being a part of the process there in Philadelphia. But that process of I'm bringing in MacArthur for the eighth inning, I'm going with Schreiber in the seventh because, damn it, I need this guy, and I'm not going to hold him. I'm not going to bring in, you know, Anderson here in the seventh inning because Schreiber's my eighth inning guy and MacArthur's my ninth inning guy. I haven't thrown MacArthur in a while. And also, one of the things that always used to bother me of, well, we can't have him throw two innings because then he's not available for tomorrow. Well, you can't predict how many pitches it's going to take. He threw 20 pitches last night in two innings. He would be available today. I think he's available today. He threw 20 pitches last night. If he threw 20 pitches in one inning, would we say, well, he's not available tonight because he threw 20 pitches in the ninth inning? No, he'd be available tonight. So you never know what's going to happen and how quickly somebody can work through those particular innings. And so even the process of that and the strategy of it, if it didn't work out, I'd still be here today saying, I love the decisions that were made by that. It didn't work out last night. But if you do it again more times than not, I feel pretty good that it's going to work out.
Well, yeah, so the hypotheticals of, because what if we have the lead tomorrow night? Well, what if you lose 5-0 and you didn't use your best pitchers? Like, I always find that absurd. It's like when people don't call timeouts, like, what do you do? Take them for the second half? You don't get those later. They're not there. Use them. So use your guys. He did a great job using his guys. Going back to what James MacArthur brings to the table as well, we knew this was part of his game, being able to go two innings. He's done this a lot in the minors, done it a few times in the majors. You know, he bounced back as a starter and reliever in the minors a lot, but even in his relieved appearances, he was throwing two innings, occasionally three. This is what James MacArthur brings to the table. He's, again, a very unique closer, very different. He's not the 98, one inning, wild, a lot of strikeouts. He's precise. Two walks this year. He had, two walks all of last year? Remember, I was bringing that statistic up.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to strike out a lot of guys, but he's also a guy that can give you two innings. If he is your best reliever, I think you're going to take that.
But he's also keeping the ball on the ground, too. So, I mean, it's like he's not striking out a lot of guys, but he's giving up a lot of fly balls. Well, I don't really like that combination of not striking out guys and fly balls and line drives. He's not striking out a lot of guys. He's not walking anybody, and he's keeping the ball on the ground. You know, it's hitting the first part of the grass, not the grass after the dirt.
83rd percentile in ground ball rate.
Yeah,
it's the guy you, I think, always knew was going to take over that role. I even thought if Will Smith started the year hot, in the end, if you were contending, you were playing better ball, you got to get to the guy who can give you even a little bit of the swing and miss. And James MacArthur, if we're being honest, has been the Royals' best bullpen arm for, you go back to last year, the beginning of September to now.
I was gonna say,
it's not close, right? I know there's a lot of new guys in there, but honestly, this is the guy that you wanted moving forward.
Yep. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up the hour coming up in the next segment. We'll get into some Chiefs football. We'll talk about potential trades and what the strategy would be, what the value would be with certain players that might be there. That comes up in the 11 o'clock hour. At noon, we'll go through the mock draft simulator, and we will pause it at different parts in the draft to see what would we do. Would we trade? What would it take to trade? Who's the player we might trade for? Is it worth it? We'll do that coming up at noon. Mick Schaefer, 1 o'clock, more Zone next. All right, so we got to tell a story on the other side of the break. We got to tell a story on the other side of the break. There is somebody in this room that could have had massive breaking news. NFL massive breaking news. But important information was specifically and, let's say, purposefully held from him, where he could have broken. He could have been the real Adarn Schefter. Well, let's check this guy's. Or how many? Well, I can't say who it is, so I can't even ask. I got to say it on the other side of the break, okay? But there was a very close. Oh, Dylan just giving it away by putting him on the video screen. A very. If you're streaming right now, or you're watching on the tube or whatever. Oh, nope. Now we're throwing you off. Who might it be? I don't know.